another development of stem cell research, a way to produce the benefits of embryonic stem cell research without destroying embryos. Is this the holy grail around the moral and ethical challenges associated with this research? Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org, practicalbioethics.org. Dr. Glenn McGee is with us. He is the John B. Francis Chair in Bioethics and Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Bioethics. First, Glenn, your reaction to the researchers at Harvard Stem Cell Institute in Boston who claim to have found a way to reprogram skin cells into cells that appear like embryonic stem cells.
It's obviously very interesting research that's being described here. The journal Cell Stem Cell, probably, unquestionably, the most prominent of the non-basic, all-topic science journals. It is an astonishingly rigorous peer review that this article went through. The description of what's been done is a description of revolutionary science at the level of basic science, the use of RNA from cells rather than viruses in order to induce an adult cell. To induce that cell to begin to have the potency, and we use this word potency, I think, is the kind of key word for whether or not we have a cell that's going to be really flexible. That's itself very, very important research. That's the first piece. The second question is whether or not, as was and is often touted by scientists who've done something akin to this, whether or not that lets us hop, skip, and jump over the moral debate about creation, embryos, abortion, the use of embryonic stem cells generally, a question about whether or not more recently legal decisions that have been made that are beginning to kind of shape the landscape of stem cells are going to rule the day, or whether scientists are going to become the heroes and take us all past this debate entirely by finding ways to get to therapy without really understanding embryonic cells at all. Which is, in a way, what this research, more than any other previous research, promises to do. I'm astonished and impressed. That's the first piece, and it's enough to say that if you're a science journalist.
But
that's where it gets complicated. This is a political debate, arguably, unlike any other in the history of science. I've described this issue as the what's in the dish problem. I hold on to that. And when I say what I mean, the clearest way to describe it is not only is the political problem of stem cells the kitchen sink, if there ever were a kitchen sink in science, it's got every single issue for me. It starts with how much do you pay women to donate eggs? Who gets the benefit? Can you patent something that's an embryo or like an embryo? What does it mean to have patented a stem cell, period, or to patent looking at one? The whole kitchen sink is there. We as a country have been through an unbelievable political washing machine on this. The discussion and debate has devolved into what you'd expect if politicians were leading science, right? That is, we have developed a whole new vocabulary that is unparalleled in being misleading. For example, distinction between therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning, where well, nobody wants to clone a human being other than a few UFO cult members and some people who said you ought to have a right to, but I wouldn't want it. But therapeutic cloning, the kind of term that's parasitic on our great fear of making copies of people, was a very effective political tool to argue against any research that would make a cell genetically identical to the cell of an adult. And during the confusion about what would be done and who would do it, we also as a country were exposed to this idea that there was fraud and to the idea that we could, as I said before, sort of hop, skip, and jump over the issue. And that's where we are again today. And astonishingly, the rhetoric in the article in Cell Stem Cell, the leading journal in the field. They published an article by Derek Rossi and his lab, which is an enormously well-respected lab and a lab that has led in using RNA. And they have described something that, if you listen carefully, sounds very much like the previous descriptions of what might avoid a problem. The difference is just that they don't use a virus in order to change stem cells such that they go from becoming or in order to create pluripotent stem cells out of, you know, hair cells or skin cells, such that they then have the power of the embryo. So they've gone from one way of doing it to another way of doing it. What's the difference? The difference is that the resultant thing, whatever we want to call it.
Entity, whatever it might be.
I don't know what to call it. I mean, I've maintained in kind of sitting in the middle of this debate while favoring embryonic stem cell research, being extraordinarily disappointed in those who favor it, in that they say that we should all have respect for embryos and respect for life, because it seems to me that no matter what you think, you can't say you have respect for anything unless you articulate what that means. One, and two, that I think we have to have some sort of notion about what we would and wouldn't do this stuff for before we proceed. And while that might be unrealistic for basic science, it's certainly not unrealistic that for us to be extremely careful in using terms like non-embryo or pluripotent stem cells that aren't embryos, when in fact actually that's what we're making.
Well, we have this new term now that's been placed into the vernacular because of this study, iPSCs, or induced pluripotent stem cells. Now, will that do any better towards having people understand that perhaps this is a way of being able to hopscotch over the moral issues? Is there an exhaustion factor in this where people are wanting to grab onto this as the solution, or is it way too soon?
Well, I think it's a very interesting question. And every time I hear this stuff, I hearken back to the days when reproductive technology was being described and, you know, people were saying they didn't know child support on a baby because it wasn't their sperm. You know, it's sort of incredibly complicated uses of language that to me sound like they either beg the question or are deliberately equivocal. And equivocation is the big problem. With iPSCs, literally the purpose of that term, from a political point of view, and it is, I think, frankly, like most terms in stem cells, inherently and necessarily political in character. There are two words that are getting used in a funny way, and the average American has no choice. They just got to understand it. The notion is pluripotency, which is pretty straightforward. It's a cell that has the power to become a wide variety of other kinds of cells. In my own work, I've literally found that you cannot get the 30 most cited scientists who work in what we think of as embryology to agree about a definition of pluripotency. You just can't do it. They don't agree. So there's multipotency, another term that's relatively similar, that sort of might mean the same thing and might not. In the existing adult body, we, of course, have cells that have varying degrees of potency. So the tough part is there's another word, totipotency. And totipotency, a word that is very rarely used these days because of its political, I think, because of its political meaning. A totipotent cell is the sort of cell that you see in twinning. The natural twinning that occurs, or for that matter, any artificial twinning that you would do in the lab. It's a cell about which there's absolutely no question that it could become another fully functional organism. So here's the question. What's the difference between a totipotent cell and a pluripotent cell? That's at the core of iPSCs. When have you made something that has so much power or potency that it begins to run home to mama and start to make more, right? I mean, the biggest fear with embryonic stem cells, I've long said, is whether or not the use of so-called pluripotent stem cells will result in the development of teratomas or tumors. And what will happen as a result of that? When those cells want to make lots of different kinds of cells, because it's very hard to keep them kind of on a leash, They may attach and they may begin to produce something, but they then begin to produce more than you expected that they will. Well, this is very different than, for example, a live organ transplant. Here, we're talking about, especially with any cell that's taken from a destroyed embryo or from another donor of any kind, anything other than what we call autologous cells from me. The risk is, and even if it's taken from me, if it's exposed to an acid or anything else in the environment, the danger of an immune response to those cells is infinitely more profound than the danger of taking an actual organ, because my body then has to respond to its entire system. If you begin to inject these cells in places that you hope will lead them to the organ that you're trying to help, or for that matter, if, for example, in the case of stem cell treatment of diabetes, you want to replace the function of the pancreas by injecting cells that have been induced to function as pancreatic cells, pluripotent stem cells that are kind of, I don't know, urged to become those cells, whether or not as they circulate freely through the body or attach to some particular structure, whether or not you might need to remove them, or whether or not if your body rejects them, they're going to take you down with it. This is a huge issue, and when we talk about risks, we have to talk about them in an incredibly complicated way. So the ethical piece has to do with that sort of easy part about risk, and the tougher part about what it means to say that you've made something that's going to hop over the moral issue. I don't think you can ever say you've hopped over the moral issue, as long as what you mean by that is that you've made something with the power of an embryonic cell, but you deliberately took action such that this thing, effectively an embryonic cell, was incapable of developing. What you've done is you've created a new kind of moral issue. And when I hear people say, well, we've jumped over the issue, I'm stunned by the political flip that's occurred. Conservatives who once proposed this as the way out of this big dilemma are now flip-flopped. So they're now arguing against this because they can see where it's going. I mean, effectively embryonic stem cell research for their purposes, and you know, and that means losing seats in the Senate. And on the other side, you've got liberals who are arguing this, for example, at Harvard, this is the only kind of cell they say they're going to use. I want to see a world in which we're honest and we say point blank, for these cells, what does it mean for us as a species to think about creation? Would you be comfortable making a giant bucket full of these cells, adding some chocolate and drinking them? I mean, actually, there's no other way to get around. You can't get around this question. How comfortable are you with the human nature of interaction and creation? I am all for IVF. I don't have any problem with most reproductive technologies. I'd like us to see us do it more thoughtfully. But in this case, I think we are being deliberately political and thoughtless, and that we will regret it in 10 years when we haven't put any real emphasis into what it means to create, and suddenly it does become popular to use these cells for things that we would otherwise think of as an abuse of what really is a human responsibility to be stewards of creation.
So the bottom line from all of this is that, yes, this is an important study. It's an advance, whether or not it's fair to say that. But it'll still take some time to resolve some of these questions in state and federal legislatures, in the faith community, and just common folk. It's just too early.
It's too early, and yes, it's too early. It's important science, but what scares the bejeebers out of me is that the ethics quotes that I'm reading about this research are all coming from stem cell researchers who stand directly to gain from this research by having nobody protest outside their clinic. I mean, Robert Lanza writes in the Harvard coverage of this, the Washington Post. He says, this is all I can say is, wow, this is a game changer. Robert Lanza is the researcher who sort of leads Advanced Cell Technology, the largest of the stem cell companies. He says, and I quote, it would solve some of the most important problems in the field. Now, what he means by that, being completely equivocal and political, is it would solve the political problem. He doesn't mean that his scientists would be better able to make therapies. When scientists get equivocal on ethics and start preaching to us about what's going to make things better, and all they mean is the cameras will go away, that's when you got to get scared.
Dr. Glenn McGee is the John B. Francis Chair in Bioethics and Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Bioethics. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.